Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Elson. We're set as usual for our Sunday morning show. And as you know, there's a lot of football on tap for today. But the game I'm really waiting for is a game tomorrow night. That is going to put Miami against New England, two great teams, and that should be a tremendous football game. And there are a number of games on today. The Detroit game should be. That team has really come along. And that's going to be on the tube, and that should be well worth seeing. We're going to talk baseball today, and that is my favorite subject, with an old friend of mine and one of Chicago's most gifted sports writers, Jerry Holtzman of the Chicago Sun-Times. We were on the beat together for many, many years, and we had a lot of fun, a lot of laughs, and a lot of good card games, and Jerry won a couple of times. But anyway, we'll be talking baseball, and we both love the game, and we know that baseball has its problems. And Jerry is very, very close to it. He attended the baseball meetings just a couple of weeks ago in Florida, and we have a very interesting guest today, and he'll be with us in just about 1 minute. We're delighted to have Jerry Holtzman with us today. I think before we get on the subject of what happened at the baseball meetings down in Florida, Jerry has been vitally concerned with the annual Baseball Writers' Dinner. He's been the chairman a number of times. And I would just like to say in the beginning that it's an event that every baseball fan in Chicago should attend. Just an absolutely marvelous show. And Jerry, you and Dick Dozier and the committee have attracted a lot of great names again this year.
That's right, Bob. We have Bob Lemon, who managed the New York Yankees to the pennant. We have Dave Parker, the Pittsburgh Pirates superstar. We have Bucky Dent, Bill Buckner, hopefully Willie Stargell of the Pirates, Dennis Lampen of the Cubs, Greg Pryor of the White Sox. It'll really be an all-star program as usual. We always have a lot of big-name celebrities at our dinner.
And they're going to honor an umpire this year, Nestor Shylock.
Yes, Nestor Shylock, the American League umpire for 25 years, will get the big award. That's the award for long and meritorious service to baseball.
And, you know, it really isn't too costly. $25 a ticket, that's for the show. A really wonderful dinner. There's a bottle of liquor on the table, and everybody has a great time. But a lot of people spend money in many, many ways, but here's a $25 ticket to an event that is really something, and you'll remember it for years. And how do they get the tickets?
Well, you get the tickets by calling the Chicago Tribune and asking for Dick Dozier. They're $25 a piece, and the banquet this year is scheduled for January 27th at the new Marriott Hotel downtown.
It's going to be a marvelous space there. Gee, that room is just fantastic.
That's what we hear. There are no posts in that room.
That's in the new Marriott on Michigan Avenue, and they have a marvelous ballroom there. There are no posts. The view is going to be great from every place. Well, what about the baseball meetings? What impressed you down there the most?
Well, what impressed me was the owner's willingness to pay Pete Rose to give him a contract for $800,000 a year for 4 years. Pete Rose, of course, is a wonderful ball player, one of the great ball players of our times. Nonetheless, he's 37 years old. He'll be 38 in the middle of April. He got a 4-year contract, which means he'll be playing the fourth year of his contract at the age of 42. And still, the Philadelphia Phillies thought enough of him to pay him $800,000 a year for 4 years. And that's a very surprising thing. And it indicates to me and to everybody else that the day of the million-dollar-a-year player is at hand.
I know that you're taking a view when you say that of the case of Parker with Pittsburgh, who probably is the best ball player around today.
Well, he'll probably be the first man to get $1 million a year for playing baseball. Although Pete Rose could have done that because he had an offer from the Atlanta Braves, from Ted Turner, the owner down there, for $1 million a year for every year that he wanted to play. So it's pretty fantastic stuff, and it just indicates to me that obviously some of the owners feel that it's good business, that they can afford to pay this kind of money. If they couldn't afford it, you would assume that they wouldn't be paying it.
Well, what's going to happen to the business of having an equity in baseball? I mean, having clubs where everybody's got a chance. You know, Jerry, you know without my telling you, because you've written about it, a lot of prominent baseball men just view this as financial insanity. Where is it going to stop?
Well, I don't think it is going to stop as long as you have one or two clubs, club owners who are intent on winning a pennant. They think, I think some of them, that winning a pennant will give them some immortality. It's like owning a great painting, you know. They think that, if you're the president, I mean, for example, whoever really heard much about George Steinbrenner before he bought the New York Yankees? Who would know Charlie Finley if he hadn't been a baseball owner? You can just go down the line with all these owners. Ewing Kaufman is another one. They're the Carpenter family. So they must figure that by owning a club, they get their name in the paper, and that by winning a pennant, that their name will be in the record book. It's like owning a Rembrandt. They'll pay as much as they can because this assures them some kind of immortality. However, it's kind of tough on the smaller guy like Bill Veeck, who doesn't have that kind of money to operate with. And even Mr. Wrigley of the Cubs, Bill Wrigley doesn't run the Cubs with his personal fortune. He wants the Cubs to be self-supporting. And as a result, he has certainly been unwilling to pay, as much as some of the other owners, have paid. And, of course, the Cubs have a smaller ballpark. They only seat 38,000. If the Cubs draw $1.5 million, that's almost equivalent to the Yankees drawing $2.5 million. So it makes a difference there, and it's going to make it much more difficult for the smaller operator to win a pennant.
Jerry, what did the commissioner have to say down in Florida?
Well, the commissioner said that the owner should hold the line on these on these large expenditures. He said that what the Yankees are doing isn't healthy for baseball because they're corralling all the talent, they're buying up all the talent. But yet, what the Yankees are doing, as Al Rosen, the president of the Yankees, pointed out, he said, this is the free enterprise system. He says, we're just giving everybody the freedom of a contract. He said, we're just abiding by the Constitution of the United States, which is what they're doing. This is free enterprise, and so you really can't knock it. If Pete Rose can go out and get that kind of money, then he's entitled to it. I mean, there are entertainers and performers who get $1 million a show or more. And that's what baseball players are. They're in the entertainment business.
Do you think, and there's quite a bit of controversy, do you think all this could have happened, or times were different, under Judge Landis's leadership?
Well, times were a lot different under Judge Landis's leadership. Judge Landis, of course, was a federal judge before he became commissioner of baseball. He was a very colorful guy, and I'm sure a good friend of yours. But Judge Landis was always fearful. I've read this several places. He was always fearful that someday the courts would discover that the reserve clause was somewhat illegal and would be overturned. And I think he just was kind of lucky to just kind of muddle through without anybody finding out about it. So it's just a matter of the times catching up.
Well, now the new contract between the owners and the Ballplayers Association will come up, I believe, at the end of the 79 season. Don't you think, and as devoted as you are to baseball, in deference to the owners who certainly are getting the worst of it today, that some type of a reserve clause is necessary?
Well, there is some type of reserve clause that's in effect now. A player, when he signs a contract, is bound to his club until he has 6 years of major league service. And then he's able to become a free agent once. Then after he signs a new contract, he's bound for the next 5 years. So there is a modification of the reserve clause now. I think that there's got to be give and take, and I don't know what's going to happen. I just don't see why the players, after winning these gains in court, these are all legal gains. They went through the legal processes. I don't see why they should be forced now to give them up, unless they can get something else in exchange. This is the old, this is labor management bargaining. And if you win something, once you get a raise, you don't go back and give it back again. And I doubt if the players are going to do this.
Well, what do you foresee happening?
I foresee these richer clubs winning the pennants. I foresee the clubs that don't have the wherewithal to compete in the same level finishing in the second division. That's what's going to happen.
Well, what's going?
As a matter of fact, it's already happening now. The Yankees have won three consecutive American League pennants.
Well, Well, they have. They won. You're absolutely right. But it just seems to me that how some of these clubs are going to start a season, they don't have a chance of going anyplace. What do they do to attract the fans? It's just...
Well, Commander, you know, it's difficult to say that all the clubs are losing money for this reason. The last year, the major leagues had the largest attendance in the history of baseball. Last year, one of the most significant off-the-field stories was the fact that the Los Angeles Dodgers drew 3 million people at home. Now, this is more people, just for their 81 home games, they outdrew the entire National League in 1931, the Los Angeles Dodgers. Now, you can't say the Los Angeles Dodgers aren't making money. People estimate that they may have made as much as $7 or $8 million last year, because there's more involved than just the admissions of the ballpark. There's parking, there's concessions, there's all kinds of, you know, promotional merchandising aspects of baseball. So I don't believe that all the clubs are losing money. I think what's happening is that some of the clubs aren't making, you know, too much money, and some clubs, of course, are making much more money. However, for example, the Philadelphia Phillies, who just signed Pete Rose, the year before last, they drew something like 2.6 million people. It was an all-time record. And yet their ownership insisted at the end of the season that they only made $18,000. Well, that's their problem. If you draw 2.5 million people, you should show certainly a greater profit than $18,000.
Well, I know you're close to the Cubs and to the White Sox. Now, they both drew well last year. The Cubs, $1.5 million, I believe. The Sox, $1.4 million. Did they make money last year?
Well, I don't know. They've never opened their books to me. I think that any club that draws $1.4 million, such as the White Sox did, or it was the third largest attendance in their history. I don't see how they, if they lost money, I just can't quite understand it. This is what they tell us. They tell us that they broke out even or so. But they've never really opened their books, and I'm not an accountant. I couldn't tell if they lost money or made money anyway. So far as the Cubs are concerned, they say they broke even. Maybe they did. I don't know. You know, these are things that only the Cubs and the White Sox know.
Our guest today, and we're talking baseball with one of the best baseball writers in the country, Jerry Holtzman of the Chicago Sun-Times. And we'll be back with our guest in just about 1 minute. Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is Jerry Holtzman, an old friend. We were on the baseball beat together for many, many years. And Jerry, you feel like I do. Baseball is the greatest game in the world.
Well, it certainly is, Bob, and it's really a very simple game to watch. The prices are within everybody's range. I think it's a very entertaining way to spend an afternoon, and also it isn't a violent game, and it's a pastoral game, and it's the national game.
Don't you think that young Wrigley now, who followed in the footsteps of his father, kind of shares his father's viewpoints about the game?
Well, I think he does, but I think we'll see a change. One of the men here just talked about why haven't the Cubs won a pennant, et cetera, et cetera. What's going to happen here is that within 5 or 6 years, I predict the Cubs will have lights at Wrigley Field. They'll draw maybe 600,000 more people. They'll spend more money for ball players. And hopefully they'll be in a better position to win the pennant. However, I think that at the same time they'll lose some of their charm because day baseball, they're the only place that plays nothing but day baseball. I think one of the reasons the Cubs have maintained a strong attendance over the years is because they have played day baseball. I don't think that having night games is the answer, you know, especially, but to make more money, they will, I'm sure, eventually go to lights.
Well, they should draw at least 2.5 million people when they do.
Well, of course, their ballpark only seats 38,000 people, and I think 2.5 million people would be about 95% of their capacity. So it'd be pretty difficult. But there's no question that the Chicago Cub franchise and Wrigley Field, to me, Wrigley Field and Fenway Park in Boston are the most exciting places to watch a baseball game. I don't think people in Chicago really realize that. Most of the new stadiums are so big and so vast, and all the seats are very far away from the action. When you go to Wrigley Field in Chicago, you're right on top of everything, and it's a very exciting ballpark because of the fact that it isn't a very big ballpark.
Mm-hmm. I share your viewpoint on that. I used to love to go to Fenway Park.
Yes, Fenway Park and Wrigley Field are the two most charming ballparks in America at the major league level, and they're also, I believe, the two smallest. And, of course, in Fenway Park, I believe last season, they played to about 87% of their capacity and drew about, I think, just a little bit over 2 million people.
It's amazing the way they pack them in. I don't think they sell season tickets there, do they?
Well, I don't think they do either. If they do, it's a very, very small number. But it's a religion. It's a religion out there, and people enjoy the Red Sox, and the Red Sox draw even very well when they lose. They don't always win the pennant, as we know. And I think that the Cub franchise is the closest, to the Red Sox in management philosophy, in ballparks, in color, in their fans also.
I think the Cubs have a good man up there in the front office in Bob Kennedy.
Yes, I do too, and I think that the Cubs will win a pennant soon, and I think that if and when they do win a pennant, that the man who should get most of the credit will be Bob Kennedy, because Bob Kennedy, to me, is an absolutely ideal general manager, because unlike most general managers, he was a scout. He was a scout for 14 years. He was a farm director. If he makes a deal, he doesn't have to go ask his scouts, what do you think of this player? He can go out and look at him himself. Not many general managers can do this. They have to rely on somebody else's judgment. Bob Kennedy is also realistic enough, I think, in his dealings with players that he's the kind of a man who's going to constantly be moving to upgrade the ball club. I just hope that the Cubs draw well enough at the gate so that they can compete financially with the rest of the teams in the National League. When the Dodgers draw 3 million people and the Cubs draw 1.5 million, there's a tremendous disparity there. And this is sometimes reflected in the money available to go out and buy players.
I think the Dodgers have a different television policy than most clubs.
Yes, they do. As a matter of fact, the Dodgers, I think, televise about 11 or 12 games a year. Chicago people don't really, I don't think really appreciate what the Cubs and Sox have done. The Cubs televise every game, home and away, except maybe for about maybe a dozen West Coast games all year long, 144 games a year. The people can sit in their living room and watch the Cubs on television. The Dodgers don't do that. They televise about 12 games against the San Francisco Giants, I think, which are sellouts anyway. So the Cubs have really had a wonderful approach to their fans. They've given their fans a lot. They keep their prices down at the gate. And I think there's much admirable about the Cub operation.
Jerry, let's take a look at the White Sox situation. They turned down what looked to me like a pretty good deal with Baltimore.
Well, I'm not so sure it was. The Baltimore Orioles were so anxious to make the deal. They offered the White Sox 4 players for Chester Lemon. They offered them
Belanger,
the veteran shortstop. They offered them a new second baseman named Rich Dower, a 17-game winner named Scott McGregor, a left-handed pitcher, and they offered them an outfielder named Larry Harlow, all for Chet Lemon. Now, I'm not convinced in my own mind that Chet Lemon will be a superstar. There are some people who think he will be. I'm not sure of it. But the fact that the Baltimore Orioles were so eager to make this deal and were so upset that the White Sox didn't make it makes me suspicious and makes me think, that if they're so eager to give up 4 players for Chester Lemon, then maybe Chester Lemon is better than I think he is. So I would be hesitant to make the deal myself.
What about the choice of Kessinger as manager?
Well, personally, I think it was a poor choice. I think that Kessinger will have enough to do. I mean, I think that what's happened here is that Kessinger is still a fairly good shortstop at the major league level. He's quite a good shortstop. What the White Sox have done is they have lost one of their best players and made him their manager. And even though Kessinger will be listed as a playing manager, and even though he will play some, I think as the manager, he will feel it incumbent upon himself to develop another shortstop. This is part of his job, to develop new players. And so he'll play less and less. And I think that managing a ball club today is a very tough job. And he'll have enough. I just don't think he fully realizes what he got into. Plus the fact he has no experience at this level. I just think that it was a mistake. I think that Kessinger should have played out his career and then been a coach or manager in the minor leagues and then become a major league manager. I think that he rushed things.
With your closeness to the game and your pipeline that I know that you have, what do you foresee in the future for a guy that you admired as much as I did, Sparky Anderson, formerly the manager of Cincinnati?
I think Sparky Anderson this year will stay home in California. And he'll play golf about 5 or 6 times a week. And at the end of the year, maybe in July or August, he'll start getting offers, and he'll sign a contract, a long-term contract, and he'll be back managing a contending ball club in 1980.
Do you, by chance, see him in the Yankee picture?
Well, it's very possible. As a matter of fact, Bob Lemon, you know, said, I saw Bob Lemon at the winter meetings in Orlando, and he knows Sparky quite well, and when Sparky was fired, Lemon's only going to manage for one more year. Lemon said that he called Al Rosen and said, Al, he said, if you want to hire him now, it's okay with me. So, obviously, Sparky Anderson is going to get a big job, and if Billy Martin doesn't come back to manage the Yankees in 1980, and I kind of doubt that he will, then Sparky Anderson very well could be the next Yankee manager.
Yes, I've had that feeling now. I'm glad that you kind of share it. He'd be the ideal type of guy to handle him, because look what Lemon was able to do with
him. Well, Bob Lemon was just wonderful. He's such a low-key guy. He doesn't have to be on center stage like Billy Martin always has to be. And Bob Lemon lets the players play, and he doesn't argue with everybody, and he isn't pugnacious. And it's just wonderful that he became last year the first manager ever to be fired by one club and in the same season go to another club and win a pennant. First time it's ever happened in all the history of baseball. And it couldn't happen to a nicer fellow than Bob Lemon.
Well, I'm sure glad that he's going to be at the baseball writer's dinner. Man, he'll get some kind of a reception.
Yes, he will. And, of course, everybody likes Bob Lemon because he's such a nice, unassuming kind of guy. You know, he's in the Hall of Fame, and yet he has no illusions of grandeur. He never talks about himself. And he's just a wonderful kind of a person to be with. He's like an old shoe. Something like you, Commander, an old shoe.
What are you, by any chance, while you were in Florida, run into our mutual friend Al Lopez?
No, Al Lopez. As a matter of fact, I asked Bob Lemon, who played for Al Lopez, if he had seen Al Lopez, because Al Lopez lives in Tampa, which wasn't too far away, and he said that no, that he hadn't seen the senor. He said the senor was probably playing golf. It's probably unfortunate because everybody loves Al Lopez. Al Lopez is one of the most beloved men in baseball that I've known, and it's too bad that he wasn't there.
Yes, certainly was. I agree with you. He's one of the nicest people I ever met in the game. Just a great person.
Yes, and he's also a very good gin rummy player. He's one of the few people that I've ever seen beat the commander at gin rummy. And then he was really kind of worried. He only played him once. He said, I'll quit while I'm ahead. You think I'm kidding? Now, this happened on a train from New York to Boston. One day, the game in Yankee Stadium was rained out, and the commander and Al Lopez sat down, and we all watched the game. It was an exciting game. Two great general players, and Lopez won by the slimmest of margins.
Well, he won. You're right. He won. You're right. And I had a tough time getting into a table after that. I was anxious to get even. Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is an old friend and one of the real nice people in the sports writing profession, an old favorite of mine, Jerry Holtzman of the Chicago Sun-Times. We'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest is Jerry Holtzman of the Chicago Sun-Times. Jerry, people ask me so many times, perhaps I've been asked 500 times, who was your favorite ball? Who did you really enjoy the most? I tell him Joe DiMaggio. I think he was the greatest ball player I ever saw. What about you?
Well, of course, you precede me by a few years. I think the greatest player I ever saw, and I shouldn't say the greatest player, but the most inspirational player. He's one of the few players that I've seen who was actually an inspiration to his teammates, and this is very unusual because they're all professionals. But Mickey Mantle was really an inspiration to the players he played with and the players he played against, and they really regarded him with a certain amount of awe that I've never seen given anybody else. And he wasn't necessarily the greatest player, you know. Although he was certainly a fantastic player, his career wasn't the longest. Willie Mays perhaps was a better all-around player. But yet Mickey Mantle, it was just an inspiration to watch him perform because he had a bad leg all the time, and yet he performed to the hilt all the way.
Well, I agree with you. That's a wonderful choice. I enjoyed Mantle all the time. And as Casey Stengel's used to say, I hope I can stick around long enough to see this guy play on two legs.
That's right. Well, of course, Mickey Mantle, and besides that, Mickey Mantle was a nice kind of a guy. You know, to go along with everything else, he had a nice personality about him, and he was a pleasure to watch on the ball field and a pleasure to be with in the clubhouse, too.
Another fellow that I was very fond of, he was a little bit before your time, was Ted Lyons of the White Sox. He's one of the few ball players to come right out of university, Baylor, step right into the major leagues, and he never left.
That's right. Ted Lyons, I've heard a lot about Ted Lyons, and of course I saw him play when I was younger. But Ted Lyons was apparently a man's man. All the men on the ball club all respected him. In fact, Yosh Kawano, who's with the Cubs now, was a young man when Ted Lyons was with the White Sox, and he still talks about Ted Lyons in almost reverential tones. He really loved Ted Lyons.
Yeah. Well, everybody did. Jerry, thanks so much for your interesting comments today. I know our listeners and our friends here enjoyed it as much as I did. Lots of luck to you and to your nice family.
Well, thank you very much, Commander, and a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you. Jerry Holtzman of the Chicago Sun-Times, one of the gifted writers here in Chicago, and an old friend, and we've enjoyed very much having him as a guest. Remember, a lot of football today, and a big game tomorrow night. Keep that in mind. That's a Miami-New England game, now Monday night. That should be one of the best games of the year. Anyway, have a happy day, and now this is Bob Elson saying goodbye. Incidentally, Dick Dozier of the Tribune will be our guest here next Sunday. So have a nice day, and we'll see you next Sunday.